Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Black Noise Radio.
So, parallel to just the political scene, you know, we have this classic dynamic. It's been true for decades. Fair has pointed it out repeatedly since founding in the mid-1980s, where when the Democratic and Republican Party leadership in Washington have a certain frame of reference, the dominant corporate media stay within it. And I think there's no clearer or more important example than the coverage of Russia and the whole uproar over Trump and Russian contacts and all the rest of it, where the mindset, the worldview of the people in Congress and the White House pretty much are the alpha and omega of where the best media will go. Noticing Trump's recent media trends, but it's so easy to lose sight of what this whole scandal about Russian involvement is grounded in, and it's as though Russia still is, to the media and for many people, a unintended red flag that kind of shuts down thinking and starts up this machinery of response, which looks very old.
Well, you know, it's new on in old bottles, and really what is not talked about is so often profoundly in plain sight, or should be in plain sight. For instance, it's very rare in all of this just tsunami of coverage, this massive coverage, to see any mention of the fact that each country, Russia and the U.S., had several thousand nuclear weapons basically pointed at each other, 4,000 in each country under the military of each nation, mostly deployed or certainly at the ready to basically be able to incinerate not just the two countries, but billions of people on the planet with nuclear winter coming after. You know, neither party, major party, talked about that. We really talked about in the news media, and then you get to, in all this coverage, with very rare exceptions, the nationalistic double standards, the failure to look at the agendas of outfits like the NSA and CIA to perpetuate and escalate hostility with Russia. We have the assumption that James Clapper, until very recently, the director of National Intelligence, is some sort of paragon of truthfulness when he was caught flagrantly lying to a Senate committee in early 2003 about Novak with documented facts because the Snowden NSA revelations came 3 months later. You know, on and on, where basic independent journalism would ferret out and highlight these fundamental contradictions in the claims from people in power versus the realities.
And just in terms of, you know, at a time where we're hearing all these competing interpretations and where there's such a hunger to hear information that feeds a certain perspective, I would think minimally we would look to the media for certain standards of evidence, you know, so that when I see a news media article talking about, well, Trump praised Putin, and wink, wink, you know, we know what that means. It just feels like such a throwback in terms of, you know, really separating fact from feeling and you know, evidence from rumor. That's the baseline.
Yes, I mean, that is a very McCarthyistic dynamic that the press and many Democrats on Capitol Hill have dragged us into, so that when a statement comes now from the Trump administration or perhaps a commentator on the margins to say that we need a modern equivalent of detente, that the U.S. and Russia have a joint state, in for instance, not blowing up the planet and better relations and stepping away from the tripwire of nuclear confrontation, where actually, in fact, as the Union of Concerned Scientists points out, we had air trigger alert nuclear missiles 10 minutes from launch up warning to be in the air. And yet there are aspersions cast, and so even a broken clock can be profoundly correct once in a while. Aspersions cast on President Trump, for instance, at his news conference on February 16th. I mean, yeah, a lot of it was barely coherent, if that. But Trump said some things about relations with Russia that make absolute sense for the survival of the planet. And here are a couple of quick quotes he said about Russia. They're a very powerful nuclear country, and so are we. If we have a good relationship with Russia, believe me, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. And yet, to the extent those sorts of words from Trump are cited by U.S. journalists, it's almost invariably to supposedly corroborate that he's some kind of stool pigeon or flunky for the Kremlin. And, you know, by no means is this a right-wing meme, particularly, as a matter of fact, it's most prevalent from outlets like MSNBC, from liberal commentators. For instance, the New York Times called it Paul Krugman 4 weeks after Trump became president. He wrote, and I'm quoting here from Krugman in his column in the New York Times, quote, "Nothing he has done since the inauguration allays fears that he is, in effect, a Putin puppet," unquote. And then the column ends with a matter-of-fact reference to the Trump-Putin axis. Well, if that's the attitude of so many commentators, especially liberal pro-democratic party commentators, that getting along with Russia and wanting to build bridges towards the Kremlin is some kind of danger to the republic and perhaps treason, we are in a very dangerous situation.
I think listening to discourse for me, Norman, is the importance of separating ideas from people, which is a very difficult thing, I think, for all of us. You know,
Do the dog catcher. Dogs. Let the media dog.
The fourth stage then is burnout, where people are just tired of the
violence. No more violence because people are tired of it. So Dr. Turchin now is predicting more violence for the U.S. But what he just spelled out sounds a lot like Operation Radio, doesn't it? Where the CIA manufactured the violence in order to induce the spiral, while blaming it on the political organizations that were on the left in order to repulse the public. That was Operation Gladio that prevented self-determination of the peoples of Europe, because they were bombed into believing that their enemies were their own children who were fighting against war, empire, stupid consumption, and racism. Now, as I said all along, what I witnessed while I was in the Congress was that there were two factions of the deep state, and those two factions were fighting for control and dominion over the apparatus of the entire state of the United States. After all, the U.S. has assets that not only could be plundered for wealth beyond belief, as was done to Russia already after the fall of the Soviet Union, I will add parenthetically, but also that could ensure global dominion for generations to come in terms of U.S. military prowess and capabilities, especially in research and weapons design. Now, also from my own observations from being inside that deep state and watching who was calling what shots, it became clear to me that there were two deep